Hello, my name is Michelle Dotson. I'm here today with Reggie Clemens. He is on Missouri Death Row, located in Potosi, Missouri. How are you doing today, Reggie Clemens?
Oh, I'm all right. I've been hanging in there and praying and trying to keep up with what's been going on my case.
How long have you been on death row in Missouri, and what age were you sentenced?
Well, I've been on death row for the past 16 years. It'll be 17 in April. It's been a very, very long road.
At what age did you come to prison?
I was 19, and I was still living with my mother and everything. I was 19 and naive.
For all of our listeners out here, can you please tell us what it felt like to be facing a murder charge and conviction at such a young age?
Well, to be facing a murder charge, it's hard for me to put into words. I think a part of me was in shock and stayed in shock. And on top of that, there was nothing there for me to learn the law or learn and understand what was happening to me and what was happening to my life as it was being just slipped away from me with a bunch of big fancy words that I only understood half of them while we were in the courtroom. I was trying to, I understood some of the evidence and I understood I know what I did and didn't do. It's real hard to put in words because it's a different reaction for everybody. But one thing I do remember is I was, when I first got locked up and was finally in the cell by myself, I broke down and cried.
Nice.
Because of the gravity and the weight of what it is that just happened to me.
When did you realize that you weren't going to be going home right away?
I realized I wasn't going to be going home anytime soon when I kept asking my lawyer about evidence and had he collected evidence that I had talked to him about in previous phone conversations. And the only time that my lawyer had came to visit me was when he was for the initial interview to take my case. And that's when I began to realize that my lawyer wasn't really pushing and fighting as hard as he possibly could in order to help me. So I think it was then that I started realizing and started sinking in that my trial was not going to be favorable because I wasn't going to be able to have the evidence that I needed.
What is a typical day in prison like for you now?
Well, a typical day for me in prison is doing some legal research or reading up on some type of case law in order to further understand what laws it is that affect my life, what laws it is that have been utilized to manipulate the system in order to put me in prison. And I finally come to understand a lot of things about the law that I didn't understand before. And I do a lot of drawing, and I exercise and stuff. I try to start my day off with some exercise in order to relieve the stress and tension that I've got to face every day, mainly from prison administration's staff members, because a lot of them they're abusive because they don't like prisoners and they make that plain with their actions. And I try to do positive things in my day and educate myself as much as I can and do something productive or write a letter to a family member or somebody I love or a good friend of mine or something. And I've been working on a book about the prison system and criminal justice.
Do you get regular visits?
Yeah. And that's one of the advantages of being on death row in the state of Missouri, because we're not locked down like other death row inmates. And we're out in general population with everybody else. So fortunately for our families, and for death row inmates as well, we're allowed to have contact visits in Missouri. And that's a big relief on our families, because the death penalty affects family members more than it affects a prisoner, because they have to, after a person is executed, the whole nother family is victimized, whether the person is guilty or innocent. Because I'm saying it leaves a hole and a void in the hearts and minds of the people who are left behind, so that the family members of the condemned can have at least that bit of peace of mind that they had an opportunity to spend time with their loved one.
When you say you get contact visits, can you explain to us, for those of us that are not aware of what goes on in the prison system, what a contact visit actually involves, or what happens during a contact visit?
Well, contact visits, they're not like what the name infers, where actually they no contact face-to-face visits without a barrier. There's no contact during a contact visit, but you can get a hug before the visit. And if it's a visit with a woman, you can get a one-second kiss, which I think is ridiculous. I think they should up that to like at least reasonably up to 10 seconds. And then they say that you can only hold hands, and that's the only contact you can make during the contact visit. You can only kiss and hug before and after. And the prisoner that's being visited must remain seated at his table at all times. And you have a long list of rules that can end up canceling your visit. It really does create somewhat of a hostile environment in what is meant to be a moment of quality time and peace. But like I said, it's...
How much support do you have from family and friends to get you through this situation on a day-to-day basis?
The love and support that I've gotten from my family has been, I'm saying, it's carried me through. And I thank God that they've been there for me, because there has been some times where having them in my life has been my strength. It's been my anchor. And I love my family, and I wish I could do so much more for my family. And that's one of the things that I definitely hate about being in prison and being on death row like this, because it's a stressful drain on my family's resources, on my family's emotional state, because some of them just try to keep a safe emotional distance. I know that it's stressful for them to spend time with me and get too close to me. So it's like trying to find a balance between loving somebody and staying close and in contact because you do love them and you are concerned about them. But at the same time, trying to keep a safe distance so that if a person is executed, it doesn't hurt too much. My mom, I'm saying she, my mother, Miss Vera Thomas, she's been phenomenal. I'm saying there's, the one thing I always say about her is that I always hope to be half the man that she is a woman. And I don't say that lightly because if, I don't even know how to put into words the how much work she's put in and all the different things that she's done. Not just for me, but she's been an advocate against the death penalty before I got put on death row. And it's her teachings and instructions and guidance that has given me the anchor that I needed within myself to make it through this. And she's come to visit me for the past 18 years every weekend. So the family support that I have, I thank God for that.
Reggie, can you explain to us what happens when you receive an execution day? What is the process?
Oh, God. It was a nightmare, but well, the first thing that happened is they came and escorted me to an isolation cell without telling me anything that was going on. I didn't know if I was being moved to another cell for an investigation or moved to another cell because they were going to hit me with another bogus violation, or I didn't know what was going on. When they moved me to another cell, after I was in that cell for a while, then it started setting in that this is it. This is that they're about to set an execution date because it was on the 18th and they had Dennis Skillicorn scheduled to be executed on May 20th. And normally they set execution days 30 days apart. So by me being locked up and being on death row all these years, that's one of the things you always fear is your name being called for anything. Because they, like, do these indirect and covert things where you don't know what they're really calling you for. When I had got placed in the isolation cell and it settled in that I had got an execution date, the first thing that I wanted to do was call my family, because I wanted to call my family and let them hear it from me before they heard anything on TV, on radio, or before they heard it from my lawyers. So my main two concerns was getting my legal property and talking to my family in order to assure them that I was emotionally stable.
What is an isolation cell? Are you allowed property in there, or?
Well, you're supposed to, whenever you go on death watch, you're supposed to get all your property. Well, that wasn't the case for me because I was only allowed to have 12 inches of legal work out of 10,000 pages of documents. So I had to choose 12 inches of documents, and they wouldn't let me have anything more than 12 inches of legal work and wouldn't let me have my property. But I'm saying, and as a condemned person, they're supposed to give you everything that you got coming. I thought that was the legal standard, but there's a saying that Potosi can do whatever it wants to, and they do.
So once you received your execution date, they left you at Potosi, or?
Well, I was still at Potosi until they transferred me to Bonterre where the execution chamber is. Once I got down to Potosi, I didn't have my legal work for at least 10 days. I mean, once I got down to Bonterre, excuse me, because the execution chamber is at Bonterre, and that's where they hold you for the duration of your execution process, as they call it.
So what goes through your mind when the time gets near? How did you cope with the on-again, off-again of it?
I still don't know. I don't want to put everything off on shock because, in all honesty, I know what gave me strength and had to be carrying me through was God. Because I didn't need, they tried to keep giving me this medication in order to help me sleep. Well, I don't like taking pills and taking any type of intoxicants. And I just, on the inside, I felt terrible. I felt like trapped inside my body. But there was a calmness that was washing over me and allowed me to sleep at night, allowed me to think and allowed me to maintain a degree of emotional stability. And it was, and that's how I know it had to be God for me to even be able to sleep under those conditions. And they let me have access to a phone if my lawyers called to schedule a phone call. But it was almost impossible for me to make a phone call to my attorneys. And then the only way I could communicate with my family was by the collect call, prepaid calls. If I didn't have any money to purchase any phone time, then I wasn't allowed to call my family or anybody. So even then, you have to, if you don't have family support, which I thank God I had, you can't call anybody, even in those last 30 days. And I know for the first 10 days of the 30, from May 18th until May 29th, the hardest thing for me was I didn't have my legal work for the first 10 days. American Civil Liberties Union found out I didn't have my legal work. And they told the people, they called and they had to pressure the Department of Corrections in order to get them to give me my legal work.
So once you received the execution date, were you still able to have family contact visits?
No, there was no family contact visits. At one point, I was on a contact visit behind the glass with my hands cuffed to my waist. And that didn't make any sense to me at all because I'm saying there's a security glass right there already. So, and I'm locked in a booth for security reasons. So there was no reason for me to have on shackles and my hands cuffed to my waist while on a booth visit. When the warden heard, found out about that being done to me, he straightened that out on his own, Steve Larkins did. But there is no contact visits while a person is pending execution. It wasn't for me anyway. And what I've heard from a lot of dudes is that they don't have a standard level of decency for the way that they treat condemned people before executions. I'm saying it depends on how they feel about the person. So one person can end up getting just nothing, and another person can end up getting contact visits, depending on whether or not how they feel about you.
Can you please tell us what the status is of your case currently?
Currently, the case is in May. This May, there's going to be a hearing. I'm still on death row, and I can still possibly be executed for a crime that I didn't commit. And that I'm innocent of. And now I have evidence and proof of innocence. It's taken a long time to collect all that evidence, but as it stands, I am presently still on death row. And the Missouri Supreme Court halted my execution and appointed a special master.
Could you please give us your information for those of us that are who are in support of your case and to find out more information about your case? Can we have your contact information?
There's the Justice for Reggie website that a person can go to, and they can sign a petition on the Justice for Reggie website. There is also a MySpace blog, but the Justice for Reggie website keeps the case updated for anybody that wants to know what's going on with the case. Also, there's a documentary that an independent filmmaker just got through finishing up. It's called the film is called Borrowed Time. And you can find Borrowed Time at www.vimeo.com.
Can you spell that for us, please?
/ Borrowed Time, excuse me. Yeah, it's Vimeo. It's on the Vimeo website. And a person can purchase a copy of the documentary, or they can make a donation to Justice Watch, who has been extremely supportive of both the case and fighting against the death penalty.
Well, I would like to thank you for your time.